You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. Super excited and honored for today's guest. I'm super excited and I want to welcome Damon John back to Making Bank. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back, man.
For sure. I know you guys are all listening, super excited to hear this. I want you to pay really close attention to today's episode. Make sure you guys are listening and really hearing what Damon has to say. We're going to dive deep into a lot of new insights that he's talking about in his book, as well as we have some questions from the audience that are going to really extract some awesome nuggets from Damon to really help you in what you're doing today. So just get ready, get your notepads, and pay attention right now. So tell us a little bit about Damon. Why, I guess you had Power Broke. That was, I think I interviewed you before for that. And, you know, Now you have Power Shift. So tell us a little about what this book kind of encompasses.
Yeah, so, you know, after Power Broke and Rise and Grind, and this is my fifth book. And, you know, it's not easy for me to write a book. And I don't just write it just to write it. You know, this is not an egotistical thing. I've already, you know, written various ones. And it's hard because I'm dyslexic. So putting out three books in 5 years is really hard. However, you know, getting pitched thousands of times, you know, in private sector and, of course, seeing over 1,000 pitches in the tank. A lot of people ask me various different questions on how to empower themselves. So when I came out with Power Broke, I wanted to really break this whole stigma of you need money to make money, right? And then I came out with Rise and Grind to really show people how to take advantage of the 24 hours of the day, right? And then what I noticed in probably about a short period of time, maybe it was about a month, there was a lot of people that after all those blueprints were out there, they came up to me and they was like, how do I take control of my life, or what are the first steps? And I realized that that had nothing to do with money. That had nothing to do with their schedule. It had something to do with a mentality. And it was called Power Shift that I came up with, because I believe that a lot of people think somebody is in control of that person's power. Somebody's not giving them power. Somebody took a power away from them, or they just don't have power.
Right.
And it's really about the art of negotiating. But people are so very transactional. They really think that their successes or their failures is when they get in front of me at the tank or when they see me. No, negotiating is part of a three-part process. Number one, you have to build influence. Number two, you have to negotiate. And we can go into detail about the negotiation process. And number three, you have to develop a relationship over a course of time. You know, and that is exactly how you and I started to work together, because you built influence with me. I built influence with you. Then we finally said, all right, let's get together and let's have this conversation. And then I was on the air with you. And I'm back, all right? Because I respect you, you respect me, and now we're in a relationship, right?
Definitely.
It's a trusted relationship. So what I wanted to do is give people the blueprint on what they can do every single day to help them start doing these things and give them the tips and the clues and the blueprint to just have the power in their life. You know, listen, if you really look at people and there's why people are either more successful than me or less successful, it's really what they negotiated through life.
That's true, right? Yeah.
So the book is really created for whether you want to get the remote control away from your significant other, or you want to convince your husband or wife, let's go on more vacations, or you want to become part of a bigger community at your church, or you want to get a raise, or you want to leave a job, or you want to start a business, whatever the case is, this is key. And I went and I said, I don't want you just listen to me. I'm not the know-it-all, right?
Right,
I'm going to put in this book, like I do, other subjects and people that I respect that have changed the world, some of them, or a bit, or influential, or you may not have never heard of them, but somebody like Charlinda, who's from Ohio, who is a really great, great woman, who was a veteran who served our country, who also is now about to be a mom, but she also created her own little brand called Mud Sauce from her grandfather's recipe, and she won one of the competitions that I was hosting with Bob Evans Farms, and she's doing extremely well, and she just empowered herself. So I put in there the Kris Jenners of the world,
who created
a global brand with three daughters.
Yeah.
Right. I put in there Billie Jean King, who we interviewed, who changed the face of sports, period, and took on the world. I put in their Pitbull. I put in their Mark Cuban. I put in there so many people. Bethany Frankel, who from a reality star perspective has now dominated a certain industry and keeps moving on. And I found the same common denominator with all these people. They move from industry to industry, and they get to the top of every industry when it's hard enough to get to the middle of just one.
Right. Yeah. For
so that's
sure.
In the book, and we can further get into it.
But no, definitely. And those are a ton of interesting points that you brought up. I know one of the things it was pretty funny was you talked about your toughest negotiation ever. And I was like, wait. I went back and reread it. I thought that was awesome. Tell us a little bit about that.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Just start with that for a second. Because I'm going to segue, because I know I have three kids as well. And it just kind of brought
back.
Well,
I opened up the book with a really tough negotiation where, you know, I'm sitting across the table from somebody like who is just like really grounded in what they want to accomplish, and they're pulling out all the tricks, and they know how to manipulate people. And it's an innate thing. Humans know, even when they're 1 and 2 years old, how to deal with various different people to get what they want, right?
Sure.
And this person is so hell bent, and then I get to the point, a lot of people say, well, you know, you should never cry in a negotiation. But this person goes so deep that they start to cry, and it just melts my heart. But then I have to hold my ground and tell my daughter, Minka, that I will not put on the tiara during tea time. But I almost did.
Almost. No, that's so funny. I was reading that, and it brought back memories of my kids were like that 2 to 4 kind of age range and everything. So, and I thought that was a funny way to start off the book and just really kind of grab the attention and everything.
But again, I get more into a serious matter in the book, you know, because before we talk about negotiating with other people, and listen, let me tell you something. The best thing about powership is most of the time the power is really when you give it away to somebody else and make them feel like they have, you've gifted them with trust. You've gifted them with this and that. And in return, they will fight for you. They will kill for you. Even at my company, I like to say I'm Batman and everybody's Robin. But most of the time, I'm Robin and everybody else is Batman. Because why did I hire you? You need to be smarter than me or have more energy than me or something else. Because if I hire you to do something and I keep taking the power away from you, I shouldn't have hired you.
Right.
You understand? So that's really what it is. But the hardest negotiation I had to have, you know, besides obviously the joking one with my little daughter, was, listen, you know, I got diagnosed with stage 2 cancer. I had it in my body. I didn't realize I had it. And at a point, and it was thyroid cancer. So thank God that's the, you know, that's the slowest moving cancer.
Sure.
But yet it was still in my body for 5 years. And, you know, we didn't know if it moved to my lymph nodes. And then after that, it would obviously, you know, probably move toward my brain. And when I had to have the first negotiation I had to have was with myself on if I decided on should I start winding down my life and consider retiring. And, you know, some of the stats are that, you know, 3 years after people over 60% of people pass away 3 years after retiring. Now, the stat could be blurred because maybe they retired because they were sick.
Right.
And or they just had no more drive. Right. And I had to say to myself, well, I've lived a better life than 10 people, right? So let me start winding down, closing up these businesses, start relaxing, start, okay, trying to do some stuff here and there, but just really accept the fact that I may pass and that I have 2 oldest daughters, and they are great contributors to this world. They are beautiful women. So thank God my ex-wife raised these girls with me in an amazing way. So they're good. My mother's still alive. I don't want to see my mother die. That's me being selfish, right?
Sure.
I don't want to see my mother die. Like, she wants to see me die, right? And then I have a my 3-year-old. She'll never know who I am anyway. She'll forget who I am. She's 3. And my current wife is super hot. She'll find a husband in 2 more days. After. So I had to say to myself, you know, do I have the drive anymore? You know, I'm tired. You know, as entrepreneurs at 50 years old, I mean, it's tiring being an entrepreneur. As much as it's fucking tiring, man. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People put it up on this pedestal. And I mean, I've been doing it since I was 14, so I know.
And so whoever's watching now who's entrepreneur, I know how you feel. It is f-ing exhausting. You can't tell anybody your problems. You're supposed to walk on water. You got to listen to everybody else's problems, right? And you got stress at home. Your time is limited and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I started to say, let me check out. and maybe I'll live another 10 years and okay, I'll fish a couple of times. Or then I had to reverse that other theory and say, you know what? I do have two beautiful older girls and I want to see my grandkids. I want them to get married. No mother should ever bury her child. My littlest daughter, she's going to also grow up to be a contributor in the world. And yeah, oh, my wife is super hot. Maybe I should enjoy that even more than ever. So the first conversation was with myself.
You know, yeah, and I could definitely see that. I mean, it's just when you get hit with that news like that, it's just like all those different things that run through your head and really, you know, trying to figure out where you stand, like you mentioned. So one of the things I want to talk about, and I know you talk about a lot deeper in the book and everything too, is influence. I know one of our questions that had come in was like, you know, how do you build a brand? How do you influence people? And so I know you have a whole chapter on influence. Yeah. Maybe kind of go over some of those points with us. And
yeah, I think that's important. I think that people think that, you know, again, being transactional, you walk into the room and you do this and that and have this conversation and they say, oh, Dave, well, how do I build influence with you if I only caught you in an elevator for 90 seconds and sure, I never knew that I would see you? Very true. But the way that you give me the pitch on what you're doing, the same way in a Shark Tank, you throw it out there, what you're doing, you give me a couple of little love, you know, listen, I went through this, and now I finally am hitting, you know, I'm in my groove, I'm hitting this, here's what my company's doing, let me give you a card or look me up. Find ways that I can easily digest who you are and who your company is, right? What happens is your influence happens when I leave and I either look you up myself, you know, on this, or my staff looks you up, and then I start going through your feeds, and I start either saying, wow, this person believes in the same thing I believe in. Oh, I can see this person's history. Oh, I can learn from this person. I can't wait to have this person on my team. I want to see this person even more, or maybe if this deal doesn't work out, this person's registered with me, and 2 months later, I may say, hey, did you ever check into that person that I talked to you about, you know? So remember, you know, your influence, your reputation is like a skyline, I say in the book. You know, when you drive through the city, everybody can see that skyline, and I can see you from miles away. On the flip side, am I looking at your influence and I'm saying, wait a minute, that person's husband always is wearing a Confederate flag t-shirt. Oh, that person probably is a racist also.
Right.
Because they're taking pictures with these people all the time. Look at how much social media you're putting out, but you don't work in the social media department, but through 9 to 5 at your office, you're putting out more content than the people that work in the social media department. When the fuck is that? you see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Influence is built through these different aspects. Influence is built through networking. I'm talking about social networking, but influence is built through regular networking as well, that, you know, people are more likely, the stats show that people are more likely to recommend somebody that they met at a bar or a networking conference than they are to recommend their own family.
Okay.
Because if you're my cousin and somebody's, and you are a plumber and you decide you are, you know, you do the pipes for small complexes. Well, somebody asked me about, do I know anybody for that? I'm like, I wouldn't tell you about you because you and I had a fight when we were 6 years old where you burnt the turkey during Thanksgiving. I got issues with you. But if I met somebody else who did the same thing in a bar, I would go like this. You know, I don't really know this person that well, but you should check into him. He seemed like a really nice guy. And he talked about he does small complexes and things of that nature. Give him a call. You know, that's how building influence and networking works.
And yeah, no, that's, you know, like you mentioned too, is, I mean, finding those connection points, you know, with the other person. So through there, and it's a lot different now too, because like you said, sifting through the social media instead of you just meeting them once at a networking event and then you don't ever see them again and no way to really figure out who they are.
And you can also build influence when you first initially get into the meeting with somebody, like you're saying, find the connection point, you know?
Right. Listen,
oh, you live in Ohio. Well, my friend Al Bubba Baker has something out there in Avon, you know what I mean? And we find ways of connection, and that's called opening up a separate file in somebody's mind when you talk to them so that later on during the times when you and I talk, you remember Avon and Al Bubba Baker, and then you remember me.
Right.
It's called the technique is called opening a file.
Opening a file, yeah, definitely. Or like an open loop kind of, you know, where you're like, oh, okay, cool. I remember that with Damon. and influence you mentioned earlier, kind of that if I run into you somewhere, you know, that 90-second kind of thing, elevator pitch or whatever you want to call it, how do you break that down? And, you know, should people really focus on themselves, or should it be more, hey, you know, Damon, how can I support you, you know, kind of
focus? Absolutely. No matter what, you have to, any of your pitches to anybody is what's beneficial for the person you're pitching. So remember, you know, you and I and everybody here has their own problems, their own schedules, their own time. And for when you, I get pitched often when people start to say, hey, I'm just looking for a shot somewhere and I just need to do this and I just need to do that. And I go, me too. I'm looking for a shot too as well somewhere, and I need to do this and I need to do that. But when you walk in there and say, how can I be an asset to your company? Also, when people pitch, they often don't ask people when they get a no or they get some kind of pushback. They don't say things such as, where do you see there being a challenge in this, or how can I make this easier for you, or why is this not of interest to you? Because so you know, and you may have to walk away. People, the deals normally don't happen during the first time you have that negotiation. But when you start to understand the other person's challenges, sometimes you can move things out of the way for them to make it easier for them.
Definitely. And you mentioned too, you know, the way the deals, they don't happen a lot of times the first time. You know, I think with Shark Tank, which is an amazing show, my kids and everything watch it, people see the deal and they see the people talking and they make a deal. But there's a lot that happens on the back end, because I know a few of my friends have gotten deals on the tank, but then They're like, all this stuff happens on the back end and some don't go through and everything else. So,
sure. So those pitches are hour long, hour and a half long, 2 hours long. You only see 8 minutes of it. Takes us anywhere from 6 months to 9 months to close the deals. We close about 80% of them. And yeah, you know what? And even, you know, when the deals close, some of the deals I put a lot of effort into and some I don't put effort into because influence wasn't built the right way on one or the other side. Maybe we got into the deal and they, you know, I just felt that they were being more difficult through the closing process for things that weren't a negotiation. Things that were just like, hey, get me over these papers. Hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about it? And they're building a bad influence with me because they're just not even making the process simple.
Sure.
You know, or in whatever case. And then I start to realize I don't like the person. Why do I want to close the deal if I don't like the person? Same thing with them. They may say, I don't like Damon. They have the right to do that too, right?
Right.
So the influence, if the influence isn't built first and the passion is in there, the deal generally, the negotiation part becomes much harder. I fight for more that I want instead of fighting for more to give to them because I feel like this person's an asshole already. Why am I giving more on that side? Then after that, when that goes through, if we didn't have a good process of influence and then negotiation, I run into them later on during the course of life. I don't want to ever do a deal with you again anyway. I don't care if your company went belly up and now you got another company, and vice versa. Maybe they end up doing really well and I go, hey, you know, I got another company in Shark Tank. Can I, you know, put it over at your store because it's doing really well? Or you use this product? And they go, no, I'm cool. You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah.
So these negotiations are real negotiations, but it's a 3-point process.
For sure. What do you think the number one reason people don't get close to achieving their hopes and dreams? Because, I mean, you get a lot of people that are dreaming and they,
the first reason is they negotiated with themselves that they're not worth it. But also they also don't know really why they're doing it. Why do they get to that goal? You know, do you want to do a company because you really want to change and help people's lives, or you want to just see your face up in lights? Those are two different things. True. And nothing's wrong with either one of them.
Right.
Right. I've been using this lately. When I know people that say, I want to be a millionaire and I want to make $1 million. All right. Well, what will you do with $1 million? Will you buy, as I tell people, will you buy one Bugatti, or will you buy income producing homes? Will you go move to another country where you can live off the land for $30,000 a year for 10 years, $300,000 there, then you put $700,000 in the market and you also help save the sea turtles? What are you going to do?
Right.
And a lot of people don't know their why. Why are they doing it? Are they doing it because they want their names up in lights? Because society has made them feel like they should do it? Because their parents really pushed them to do it? And a lot of people don't know their why. And when they go into a negotiation, a lot of times they don't really know their ass. They're so busy saying, I want to get to the table and I want to do a deal. But what is your willingness to do it or not? Where is your line in the sand? You know what I mean?
Right. No, that's definitely an interesting thought. What with the negotiation then, what are kind of your top three tips or strategies, to really maximize it? Because I know you talk about making the first move and different things in there.
Yeah, there's many I put in there, but I'll give you a couple. So first of all, understand the target and understand what is beneficial for that target. Me, when you negotiate with me, if you come in and pitch me clothing brand, I'll give you an example. Bombas socks, which is the number one invested product in Shark Tank history, is a sock brand. They did their homework on me. They did their homework on the sharks. I did not want, and the only thing I did not want to buy on Shark Tank was clothing, because I have 10 clothing brands and 8 of them are dead. That's the last thing I wanted. I wanted to diversify my portfolio. So I'm the last shark that Bombas should do a deal with or would get a deal by.
Right.
They come in there though, but they knew me as a target, and they realized one thing, that I love to give back to the community or to people. And they also knew that I didn't have a strong portfolio for direct-to-consumer sales. I was depending mainly on retailers, and we know the environment of retailers, right? I'm now at the mercy of if other people do well with their retail outlet. So what did they sell me on? They came in there and sold me on, I'm going to show you how this technology works and how you're going to get it directly to the younger consumer. And also, at the same time of selling one, we're going to give away a pair of socks to the homeless, because that's a big concern they have, is caring for their feet. So I closed the deal. And think about it. I was the only one who did not want it. That's how powerful they were in understanding the ability to negotiate and where they added value to me. Even more powerful than
right.
when I understood where they added value to me, right? So they understood their target. They knew how to break it down. They knew how to understand, to pass on what is of value to the target. So that's extremely important in negotiating. Also, what's extremely important in negotiating is to listen more than you talk, because the truth is, and I always say, you gotta communicate like your face is built, one mouth and two ears. The truth is, the buyer is telling you what they want, even if the buyer doesn't know what they want. So what Bombas heard from me was, yeah, retail's dead. Yeah, you're right, retail's dead. This is why this is of value, right?
Right.
Here. Come on here. Right? So you're hearing it all, and so that's how you communicate. And then we put in the book also ways of communication. A lot of people, listen, over 65% of the way people communicate is body language. That's the most important part, over 65%. What you say is technically only 10% of the value, and the rest is how you say it. But I put in the book how people communicate, because I love the way that used car salesmen used to communicate. Did you read that part of it yet?
Not yet, no.
Good, because it's a big book, so.
I noticed.
here's what used car salesmen do. They realize that people communicate in various different ways: sight, sound,
right,
taste,
okay,
feel, and smell. And the same car, there was a red Corvette sitting there, and you walked in and they see that you're talking in visual ways. Oh, I see your place like this, and I see this, and I see this, and I see this. They'll say to you, can you see yourself in this Corvette driving down a winding road, and the fall leaves are just blowing all around you, and your hair is flowing back? Can you picture yourself like that? If you're talking about feel, you're coming in, you're touching the car and everything else like that, they go, can you feel the manual in this car, and you're shifting gears, and you feel the roaring and the power of the engine and the soft leather on the steering wheel? If you're talking about smell, you're like, can you smell the rich leather, and you driving down the road and the fall leaves, and you smell that Thanksgiving air, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So they
oh, yeah,
speak in these ways. If you're talking about sound, they'd be like, can you hear the roar of the engine and those Bose speakers just banging, and you're just going through, and the screeching of the wheels. So there's ways that people communicate that people don't even realize they're communicating. And now with social media, you can look through people's feed and you can see how they talk.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Like if you go through my social media, you can tell that I talk more in visual. I'm a C person. Can you see this? See this? See this? Because I'm dyslexic. So that's that's other ways that we give people information on how they can communicate. So if they just manage to master one of these points, it will change their life dramatically. It'll start to compound.
While some things seem to happen in the blink of an eye, like volatility and inflation in the markets, other things take time, like building a successful startup or perhaps creating a great piece of art. I'm no artist myself, but it could be foolish not to recognize the existence of art as an asset class. Billionaires have been investing in the art market for centuries, while some of us have been sticking with the classic 60-40 equities and bonds ratio. But get this, there's finally a way to get access to the investment of the ultra high net worth investor without being one, with the $1 billion fintech startup Masterworks. Using data and technology, Masterworks is democratizing the art market. They've transformed a centuries-old asset class so that everyday investors can invest in blue chip pieces from iconic artists like Warhol, Picasso, Vanquist to add to their portfolios. And the best part, it only takes a moment to invest in blue chip artwork on their platform. You can get started at masterworks.art, /makingbank. My listeners get priority access to their latest offerings. Just go to masterworks.art /makingbank. See important disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer. I'm going to ask one of the questions here because I think it'll tie in with what we're talking about. Mia from Paleo Pets asks, how do you choose what businesses that you invest in?
Yeah, so, you know, Shark Tank is a little different than the real world,
right?
Because I'm right there, it's on, and I have my four investors right there at me, and I don't have time to do any, we don't know anything about those people.
Sure.
I don't have time to do any kind of math, meaning any kind of research on them. So I generally choose businesses, honestly, that I like the person. I think that the person comes up and they pitch something that, first of all, I see the viability in the business. It's not a subsegment of a subsegment market. The person is so energetic. They're telling me the story of this product and how they came up with it in a way of a story. We love to hear stories. It's the old infomercial. Has this ever happened to you? And then you go, oh, shit, yeah, it has happened to me. And then you said there must be a better way.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have a better way? By the way, I do have a better way. So, you know, you relate to that, and then you relate to the person's story. They start telling you about, I like to hear about how many lumps that you received coming up the ladder, and that now you know all the things you don't need to do, how you made some smart moves even though you were failing, and now how you still have a passion and how you believe that you're over-delivering for the customer out there. And you're not saying, and it's in the convo. It's really clear when people are like, well, I did this and I did that and I did that. Well, I don't give a shit about you. What do you care about the customer, right? And when people start to say, well, I wanted to do this for this person. I wanted to change the way this was done. And then you feel that person is going to be a really great partner to you. And that whether that business works out or not, we're going to do another business together. So, you know, what do I look for to invest in? I look for the people, because right now, I don't need to, if my money, if I want to just go and invest in just great companies, I don't need to meet anybody. I send my money over to Elon Musk, and guess what? It comes back. I send my money over to Apple, Amazon, I don't care. I know the market's going through their changes, but guess what? I send my money over there, and I invest in brilliant people, and they never call me.
Yeah. Definitely. No, that's interesting. And guys, I hope you were just paying attention to what Damon just said. That little segment that he just went through contains so many amazing insights on just what he's looking for, you know, which is not just Damon. There's a lot of other investors and people out there that look for that same exact thing, and how to communicate with them through stories and through influence and everything as well. So another question based off of that, Eric Van Horn asks, he goes, what was the mental shift that happened when you went from business owner to investor?
You know, that you had the mental shift that happened was, as a business owner, everything is on me. No good, bad, or indifferent, it's on me. I get paid last. Any mistake that happened, by far, it's my responsibility. As an investor, you have to let it go a little bit and allow the other person to do what they do and not force their hand. I mean, unless you're taking a majority share because you don't have faith in that person, and then that's a whole different story. Then it goes back to falling on you if you're a majority share. But it really is knowing that another person's not necessarily going to value your opinion as an investor as much, and knowing that your opinion may not be of value, because the whole reason you're investing in that person and or that company is you believe that they've found the better mousetrap that you didn't have. So giving up power and shifting the power over to another person is when you're investing.
No, that's great. And that kind of brings me to, like, you know, you have a whole section in your book talking about relationships. And I think one of the biggest focus, and like we always try to do, is bring value without expecting anything in return. You know, kind of dive into this section here and kind of give us an overview of what you're talking about, and then we can go a little bit deeper in it.
Yeah, you know, I try to, you know, over my years as an investor and even as an entrepreneur and a business owner, I try to give people 3x times what they're looking for. So I'll give you an example. If I'm doing a deal on the show and or in person and somebody says, well, you know, give me $1 million for the business for 25% of the business. And I would say, okay, well, what are you looking for the $1 million for? Well, I want to do advertising, marketing, and this and that. I said, well, I don't know if I want to give you $1 million because you're going to pay for something that I could probably get for you. I can pop up on any national show that I want to at any given time, and you would have to probably pay, you know, $200,000 for those 10 minutes or whatever the case is. Why don't we do this type of deal? How much are you going to get to in revenue this year? I'm going to get to $6 million. Okay, no problem. Why don't you give me the option to invest, but I'll also get a certain amount if I get you to $10 million. And after the $10 million, I go up in value, whatever the case is. And so on that person's side, it would be like, six, man, I already gave him a high number. I already know you gave me a high number. Six. Whew. If I get to eight, I'm lucky. If I get to 10, that'll never happen. It's all cream. So what happens now? So if you think about it, I'll say to the person, so I'm going to bust my ass. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to promote the stuff. I'm going to go and try to help you bring down your cost for manufacturing. You get me working for you for free. Because if I don't get to that 10, then guess what? You just had me working for you for a year for free. And if I get past the 10, you made more than you ever would have thought you would have made. That's a win-win for everybody. And guess what? If you don't get to the 6, then I save my money anyway, because you're probably not going to ever get past where you're going to get, because you're talking hypothetically, and I'll just move on. So it's a win-win for both parties. And I've done plenty of deals like that. And I would say about 50% of them went to zero. And okay, I had time and energy lost. And 50% of them superseded where both parties would have expected. And they've been extremely, extremely beneficial for both parties.
That's awesome. Like, I've talked to Jay Abram before and everything else, and he talks about relationship capital and everything. I know you're just, you know, bank your relationship capital. Yeah. What do you mean by that? And kind of what, you know, how do you go about doing that?
Well, first of all, relationship capital. So, you know, banking relationship capital means don't withdraw too much from the bank.
Mm, okay.
A lot of people pitch me to pitch Mark Cuban. Hey, I want to pitch Mark Cuban. I go like this. Good, because I want to pitch him too. So, you know, the man got a couple of $1 billion.
Right.
But, you know, I don't take it. Listen, Mark Cuban only answers emails. He does not get on the phone. I don't take it personally. I don't hit him up all the time, because I wait for there to be extremely great opportunities that I may see that can add value to his life, and I'll pass those on to him. And I also don't call the guy. Other people get offended because Mark never talks to him. Right. He doesn't get on the phone. So I know not to draw the bank by calling him unless it's a real issue, and or I don't pass on too many people just because I have the relationship.
Sure.
He knows I value who he is and my relationship with him. I'll give you another example. Gary Vee.
Yep.
We're really cool. We love each other. We want to get our families together, but he's busy as shit just like I am. So you know what I do? I look at my speaking tour. I look at his speaking tour, and we'll meet in Mexico 3 months from now, when we know that we're on the same stage that same day. I don't strain the relationship. He doesn't strain my relationship unless he needs me over at a podcast. I need him at a podcast or whatever the case is. So when people feel like you are representing their brand and you don't understand them from a business standpoint as well as a reputation standpoint, you're banking that, you keep that and you hold it sacred, they depend on you more to do more with you and vice versa. So me and Mark and me and Gary, we do deals all together because we understand how the relationship works. A lot of people just really don't get it. Don't send me a long email. I've said it a million times. I'm dyslexic. So when you send me a long email, you're not getting an answer most likely because I got to answer all the people who respect and understand the relationship. Right. I answer them really quick. When I look at your email, I get tired. I get sleepy. I'll get to it tomorrow. I never get to it. So a lot of times it's relationship capital. A lot of times when we have had deals together with people and they have dissolved, if we put them down, the deals, and we put them and we buried them in an amicable way, and I loved the way you did it, that's relationship capital. Mm. I can't wait to do another deal with you. I'm going to bring you in on other deals because you were the most pleasant person to deal with when shit hit the fan.
Right.
That's what relationship capital is.
No, that's great. And, you know, I like how you talk about not pulling from it, but it's more about understanding how to communicate with the other person.
Yes.
And which is huge because, like you said, a lot of people just, okay, I'm going to go do this, not thinking about the other person.
That other person, exactly. And again, you know, I love the saying, you know, when people become problematic, you want to be somebody who is not problematic. You want to be somebody, we all know everybody at the companies who come in and they're happy.
Right.
And
right.
They're that one who you go, this person has to have a hard day sometimes, right? And we all know the people who come in and every day they got a goddamn another problem. Right. And so I tell people in the book, listen, the reason why we hire people or invest in people is literally after I see your resume, it's, do I like you? Can I stand mm-hmm. sitting next to you for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for the next 5 years of my life? And if you're on the team and you're the problem, you're the person who always has a problem, and then this person always is doing great, when times come and go, because times are like this, when you got to cut staff, guess who I'm firing?
Yeah, the problem guys.
The problem guys.
Yep.
And it's those people who never want to leave, right? So, you know, that's how we look at relationship capital and every day when we're talking about power shift and giving power and taking power and, you know, and being in control of what you're doing.
No, that's fantastic. We got a few minutes left, so I want to pop just a couple more questions your way. Aaron Stokes asks, how do you know what advice you should listen to and what advice you shouldn't? Especially from someone you respect?
Really, really good question. Never been asked that before. I can only tell you how I filter out the advice that I take or not. I go to several different sources. I do my homework on several different sources and see what works out or not. And sometimes the advice may be great, but it just needs to be adjusted a little bit. I'll give you an example. I only first did the deal with Bombas. I called them, hey, man, you know, got all these influencers and all these people. I mean, I can get you these logos, those logos, because I'm the logo whore, right? and they would be like, thank you. Click. Because they were so focused on one thing. They were like, no, our socks are moving and they're selling. Because guess what, Damon? You couldn't see anybody's logos anyway because their feet are covered.
Right.
Right. So number one, you idiot. Nobody can tell. Number two is the reason why they're moving so well is because today people love to say, instead of I gave at the office at the end of the year, they love to say I gave 200 times this year. Every time I bought a pair of socks, I helped the homeless. Every time I bought this, I clean up the ocean.
Right.
This, I stop human trafficking. So the reason they're selling is because people are talking about them at the dinner table. They're talking about them at the water cooler on Monday morning. Your stupid ass logos don't mean anything. Nobody cares, you idiot. So what they did was they took my advice of saying, let's find ways to get it out there, but they got it out there in a different way than me thinking logos.
Right.
Right? So yeah. To go back to the person's question, though, as it is challenging, I find that you need various different mentors around you. And if you don't have mentors, listen, pick up books and or things. And when you get some advice, and if it's a really decision, you know, a harsh decision that you have to make, good, bad, or indifferent, take your time, you know, think about it, ask several people, read as many blogs or this and that, and if you find the same common thread through a bunch of people that don't know each other, try to put it together. But it is really, really a great question. And where is the source coming from, the advice? That's the bigger issue.
Right.
I didn't listen to a lot of people in my neighborhood when they gave me advice because I was like, well, you're broke living right next door to me, and you're telling me how to do this? What are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So oh, yeah.
Where the advice is coming from.
Right. That's good. Yeah, no, that's a good response for that for sure. All right, one last question, then I want to dive in. I know you got a great opportunity for our listeners to grab your book and everything. This is from Cash and Roman. We just
put up the book. I'm sorry.
Cool. There it is. Sorry. Mine didn't get here in time, so.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Awesome. So this is from Cash and Roman. We just recently launched a clothing business called gratitudegear.com, giving back, helping people have more gratitude in their life. How do we build this to $1 million with social and everything these days?
I mean, that's such a general question. I don't know how to give you an answer. I mean, I don't care whether it's clothing or toothpaste. Where is the, you know, what is the small community that you have that are willing to do like Bomba Socks and talk about gratitude out there? And how does that person look? I mean, when he says they want to build it to $1 million on social, I don't know if they're doing zero business and they're just starting. I don't know if they're, you know, I don't right. know enough about it. You know what I mean? But reality is, you got to build influence, right? And and so I talk in the book about how did I build influence in my community at first? Well, I didn't have any money, and I had a lot of rappers who lived in Hollis, Queens. A lot of rappers come from Hollis, Queens. Ja Rule, 50 Cent, LL Cool J, Run DMC, Lost Boys, whatever, LL Cool J, Salt and Pepper.
LL.
a lot of them come from there, right? I had money for 50 shirts, and here's what I did. I realized that if I gave the shirts to the rappers, first of all, I gave it to their cousins. The rappers wouldn't take. I mean, I had to get to them. Their cousins would probably wear it and then throw it away because they get stuff all the time. But I realized that the big guys in the neighborhood, the 5 and 6X guys, they never had anything fashionable to wear. They only had Rochester Big and Tall. They wear a black shirt or a white shirt. They had to pay a lot to get something custom made.
Right.
So I took 50 shirts and I made 55 X's and 6X's and I gave it out to all the big guys in the neighborhood. And those big guys ended up being in the front of the red rope at a club. They ended up being the bodyguards for most of these rappers. And they wouldn't wear the shirt once and throw it away. They would wear it 10 times a month with this huge logo on it. And they would keep wearing it. And what happened was it started to – all the rappers started to see it. And this rapper started to say to me after about a year, yo, what am I, chopped liver? I'm like, no, you too fly, man. You ain't going to wear it. No, I'll wear it. No, you sure? Yeah, I'll wear it. And I built influence because they started to see the logo so much around them.
Right.
Other people that I built influence with just those 50 shirts. And that's how I warmed it up when I got to those guys.
That's awesome. Damon, awesome to have you back on Making Bank today. Tons of amazing insights. Guys, I hope you guys are really taking notes, listening and paying attention. You're going to have to go back, listen to this, watch this over and over, and listen for those key points that Damon makes throughout the interview. Damon, tell us a little bit where, I guess, obviously the book's probably Barnes & Noble and Amazon and everywhere, right?
Yeah, the books of Barnes & Noble, Amazon, everywhere. We're, you know, I'm going to be popping up in many cities as well. And I do something like, you know, I'll sometimes say, hey, guys, if you go down to, you know, whatever, if you get 10 books, I'll be in this city this time. And 10 of us can meet in my hotel lobby and we'll chop it up, you know, and get 10 books. You know what? Give them away or resell them. Be the entrepreneur that you're supposed to be. But yeah, you absolutely can get it on all the platforms from Amazon to Barnes & Noble to even audiobook as well.
Cool. Awesome. And with that, too, is if they grab 10 books and DM you the receipt on Instagram, right?
So right now, if you grab 10 books and you DM me, so I guess it's going to be the people who do it the fastest. If you grab 10 books and you DM me the receipt on Instagram, we are going to pick 10 people that I will have a one-on-one 10-minute call with. So we should just DM me the receipt and we'll start out having some conversations with some people and hopefully I can get you some good advice on how to power shift and change your life.
Awesome. You guys heard it here. Damon, thank you again for coming on Making Bank. An honor to have you back on the show.
Josh, thank you for always supporting me. Love what you're doing, man. Keep changing people's lives, brother.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, SuccessThinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.